The fifth item.
A leader
is an evaluator. Evaluation has to do with the quality of the program or the product. Are we doing what we say we're doing? Are we producing the kind of product that we want to produce? Are there any improvements that can be made or changes that need to be made? These are the kinds of questions that evaluation would seek to answer. The evaluative step, therefore, is a measurement of the success or failure and the degree of success or failure in the achievement of our organizational objectives. Information gained as a result of evaluation lays the basis for change in the program, which may result in re-identification of needs, re-clarification of objectives, and restructuring of forms and methodology. Evaluation thus turns into planning. Planning is followed by supervision. Supervision by evaluation, and the cycle constantly repeats itself. Evaluation also includes the evaluation of personnel involved in doing the work of the organization, those to whom he had given delegated responsibility. As leader, you also will be an evaluator. You will examine not only the program of the organization, but also the personnel who perform the program. Number 6, delegation. Proper delegation involves 3 elements: delegated responsibility, authority, and accountability. Delegation has to do with the leader co-signing certain tasks and authority for those tasks to other persons in the organization. One of the basic reasons for delegation within the context of the organization is sheer necessity in order to get the job done. The physical and mental weight of the organization cannot be carried by one or even a few. Their incapacity to move adequately under the burden should be an immediate indication that delegation is necessary. It serves in the important task of training future as well as present leaders for the organization. The leader who would bear heavy responsibility in some executive office must first learn to bear lighter responsibility in some subordinate role. Dr. Kenneth Gangle mentions what he calls 4 degrees of delegated authority. Number 1, there is what he calls executive authority. The highest level is the executive level, and it carries with it the full authority to see the task through to its completion. The leader assigns to the delegate some given responsibility, and then the leader no longer concerns himself with it. The second level is what is called reporting authority. In a reporting type of delegation, the individual who has received the responsibility is responsible for undertaking the task, but must report to his supervisor at predetermined points in the execution process. Reports may be single or multiple, but the supervisor is asking to be kept informed of what decisions are being made in the carrying out of the task. So there is executive authority, there's reporting authority. Number 3, there's recommending authority. At the level of recommending authority, the supervisor delineates a problem to his subordinates and asks for some suggestions of ways that this problem could be handled. Before any action is taken, the one receiving the delegated responsibility reports to his supervisor by indicating what he proposes to do in the situation. If his course of action meets with the approval of the supervisor, he is then allowed to go ahead and carry it out. Reporting is also a part of this level of delegation, but the essential difference is that the report is given before any action is taken. So there is executive authority, there is reporting authority, there is recommending authority, and then a 4th level of delegation is observing authority. The one receiving this type of observing authority finds that he is at the lowest level of the process and is merely asked to observe a given situation and offer his opinion on it. Quite possibly, he will not be asked to take any action. The supervisor may turn this fourth level of delegation into an action level and request that the worker carry on further with the project. In the initial delegation, however, he is merely asked to look over the situation and provide the supervisor with some working facts. Some leaders are not delegating because they have at one time or another attempted the process and the attempt aborted, creating a negative attitude toward delegation in general. If the following guidelines are observed, however, delegation can become a valuable tool to the executive leader. Here's some things to keep in mind in delegation. Number one, choose qualified people. Delegate only to people who are qualified for the job. To ask someone to carry out a task when one knows that he cannot achieve what is being asked of him is not only to render the task ineffective, but also to push that worker across the threshold of his frustration ability. A second guideline, exhibit confidence. The leader should demonstrate visible confidence in the worker's ability to achieve the assigned task. Number three, make the duties clear. Generalization is the death knell of successful delegation. It is necessary to specifically delineate what is expected of the worker, what time or date the task is to be finished, and if necessary, what form the finished product is to take. All necessary information to accomplish the task must be provided. Number four, do not give methods. The how of the task is usually not proper information to be communicated in delegation. It is possible that the individual worker will do things quite differently than the supervisor. Assuming he achieves the same results, no complaint should be offered. The worker should be allowed the freedom to choose his own methods. Fifth principle. Set up controls. Periodically, from the point of delegation to the point of conclusion, the leader should be advised as to the progress being made. Number six, give praise and credit. This is an important step in reinforcement. Delegation builds the future leadership of the organization. Its elements include responsibility, authority, and accountability, all of which must be reckoned within proper perspective in the delegation process. Someone has said that with all the evidence to commend it, failure to delegate is an emotional problem, not a rational one. The leader who can effectively delegate tasks to people and then effectively supervise them in those tasks is demonstrating the gift of administration and contributing to the overall organization. A seventh item, communication. Use communication as a leadership tool. Many of the personnel, administrative, and organizational problems that we have can, in one way or another, be traced to communication, or perhaps miscommunication would be a better term. In the final analysis, all that really matters is what they heard. What we said is of little value if what they heard is different. They will act upon what they heard rather than what we said. Leaders should be constantly evaluating how they communicate and improving their communication. And we will never completely solve the problem, but we can solve many problems before they become big problems if we work constantly on communication skills. Communication studies have indicated certain things that the leader can do to enhance his communicative abilities. Some of these would include the following. Number one, use images and word pictures. Number two, use examples that people can relate to. Number three, talk about traditional values. Number four, appeal to common beliefs. Number five, get to know your audience. Number six, use repetition. Number seven, be positive and hopeful. Number 8. Shift from I to we. Number 9. Speak with passion and emotion. Number 10. Have personal conviction about the subject. In effective communication, leaders will use a variety of modes of expression. Leaders make full use of all available media to communicate to others. Successful leaders use metaphors and figures of speech. They give examples. They tell stories. They relate anecdotes. They draw word pictures. They offer quotations. They recite slogans. They do anything to communicate and ingrain that communicative information in an understandable way in the mind of the hearer. Enriching language with stories and references and figures of speech is something that all leaders can do. In many ways, it is a natural way of communicating. Language is a powerful tool. An 8th item that I think we could mention, confrontation. There will be times when leaders will have to confront. The purpose of such confrontation is to find the truth, or to propagate or to prevent certain activities. When confrontation is necessary, gain the facts that cover the entire controversy. Also, the leader's reasoning should be logical. Little is more embarrassing than to have it pointed out to us that our reasoning contains fallacy. The leader must be sure that the argument is clear to him. The leader should certainly avoid using derogatory expressions. The leader will be sure that the main outline of the argument are made prominent. They draw the opponent's attention as well as that of any hearer or reader to the main subject. This prevents the leader's losing himself in the trap of meaningless details. The leader will listen carefully to explanations that are given. Give a patient hearing. Have an open ear and an open mind. Seek to see the situation from the worker's point of view. Be sure that you understand their statements. When it is necessary to give a reprimand, keep the following suggestions in mind. Number 1, be specific. Tell the employee what he did wrong. Tell him what you observed and how that differs from what you expected. Give him a chance to clarify the issue, but don't accept excuses. Number 2, tell him how you feel about what he did or did not do. If you're surprised, angry, or disappointed, tell him. Number 3, put the reprimand into perspective. You are reprimanding the employee for a specific action in a specific situation. You're not reprimanding him for being a bad person. You're not reprimanding him for being a bad employee. Let him know that you value his work in general and in other specific situations, though not in this particular situation. Number 4, don't repeat the reprimand. Once the reprimand is given, you've done it. Go back to work. This brings us to a 9th characteristic. A leader must be a futurist. He must have a vision of what can be, not just what is. Bennis and Nannis, in their book, The Strategies for Taking Charge, wrote, "To choose a direction, a leader must first have developed a mental image of a possible and desirable future state of the organization. This image, which we call a vision, may be as vague as a dream or as precise as a goal or mission statement. The critical point is that a vision articulates a view of a realistic, credible, attractive future for the organization, a condition that is better in some important ways than what exists now." This brings us to the end of number 6.